Chapter 13. After that, it somehow becomes normal for Stiles to head to the Hale house after school. On some days he stays for dinner, on others he goes home to cook for his father. But lately, Sheriff Stilinski has been working later hours. Stiles is grouchy about it, but Derek suspects he's doing it primarily so Stiles has the free time to come over. He plays chess or shogi with Peter. He watches Thomas the Tank Engine or builds Lego towers with Tyler. He does his homework curled up in the bay window at the front of the house, while Cora does hers sprawled on the living room floor. He chats with Laura while she cuts pictures out of magazines for some project she's doing. He fits there in a way that he couldn't possibly have imagined. It should feel awkward when Derek comes home from work, but after the first week, it doesn't. They say hi, and sometimes he'll ask how Derek's day was, but more often, things are lost in the chaos of the dinner hour. Dinner is primarily his responsibility now, because after about a week and a half, he saw Laura looking speculatively at a chicken before putting it in a pan to put in the oven, and he suddenly couldn't help it anymore. "Okay, stop," he says, walking over. "What are you doing to that poor bird? It gave its life for you to have food. At least put some frickin' olive oil on it before you turn it into charcoal, for Christ's sake." Laura looks somewhat chagrined. "I'm not really cut out for this pack mom stuff," she says. "It's like when the kids were born, I decided to take a couple years off of work, and suddenly I'm responsible for all this stuff, and I just..." "For the love of God, let me help you," Stiles says. "Please tell me you have spices and an actual roasting pan, because if you put that bird in the oven in a baking dish, I won't be able to hold myself back." They have the pan, but not the spices. Laura insists on taking him to the store so they can buy whatever he thinks is necessary. He gets some herbs and some lemons, some red potatoes and vegetables. He roasts it all together, and it comes out pretty well, he thinks. Not too bad for something he did off the fly. As it turns out, there are two chickens, given the number of people they had to feed. It's a good thing, too. The meal flies off the metaphorical shelves and ends with Cora and Jonathan literally squaring off over one of the chicken carcasses. The birds are picked clean. "That was really good," Derek says. "Yeah?" Stiles grins at him, unabashedly happy for the first time in weeks. "Then tomorrow I'll show you guys what spaghetti is actually supposed to be like." He does. He makes a triple batch, and somehow his father winds up coming over, and they all sit and stuff amazing amounts of food into their mouths. His father gets along well with Laura and her husband, and he greets Derek cautiously, but doesn't seem to have a problem with him. Derek sits next to Stiles and tries to remind himself that he can't get too close. With him there for dinner almost every night, eventually he knows he's going to have to sit at a table with Talia, and two nights after the spaghetti is it. He's made a pork roast. There's rice and green beans to go with it. He's starting to wonder how much longer he can afford to do the grocery shopping for the Hale family. He has some savings, mostly from selling papers on the internet, but feeding werewolves is expensive. He's sure that they would buy the groceries if asked, and to be fair, the roast itself came from their freezer, but he feels awkward asking. Talia's just finished up with a court case and is too tired to go back to her office, and Stiles can't really blame her. It's her house, her pack. He can't make her stay in exile just because he's uncomfortable with her. Aaron is home, too, and things are awkward but not unbearable. He wants to leave, really, but he doesn't want to let Talia chase him away. Besides, Laura has some sort of gift from God to ruin a meal if left alone with it for 5 minutes. And he worked hard on the damned pork roast. So he puts everything on the table and sits down, and everyone starts eating. After three bites, Talia puts her fork down and really addresses Stiles for the first time. "This is very good, Stiles." "Thanks," Stiles says, determined to meet her gaze and not back down. "Where did you learn to cook?" she asks. He can't imagine why she cares, but answers anyway. "The Food Network and the internet, mostly. My dad would eat fast food every day if given the opportunity, and that's not good for him, so I sort of had to learn after my mom died." "Thank God," Cora says cheerfully. Laura just laughs. She doesn't take offense at their teasing. It's a rare skill in a teenaged boy, Talia says. Stiles knows that it's meant as a compliment, but it stings anyway. He had run into a classmate at the grocery store a few days before. Oh my God, they've got you in the kitchen, the boy had said, chortling. And school the next day had been full of girls giggling and asking if he had to cook barefoot and how soon would Derek get him pregnant so he could really fulfill the woman's role. It doesn't help that Talia has never addressed her initial comments to him in any sort of way, and he knows that the only reason she's been making herself scarce has been for Derek's sake, not his. He shoves the rice around on his plate and says, "Yeah, I bet you look for that in all the potential mates you run through your screening process." "Actually, den-making is a very valued skill in PAX," Aaron says, when it becomes clear that nobody else knows how to respond. "Will there be a quiz later?" Stiles asks. "If there is, I'd say you already passed it," Jonathan says, his mouth full of pork. Stiles scowls and stabs murderously at his dinner. "Why are you upset about this?" Talia asks, her eyes narrowed. She has that same someone-has-upset-you look that Peter had gotten earlier. From Peter, Stiles had accepted it, even welcomed it. From Talia, it makes him want to slap someone. So he glares her down and says, "That's none of your business." The table sits in a collective stunned silence as everyone tries to compute the fact that Stiles had just said that to the alpha. Talia recovers first, and her eyes are starting to show that faint red shine as she says, "If you're going to be part of this pack..." Stiles shoves back from the table and says, "Enjoy dinner, guys. I'll see you later." Derek turns a snarl on his mother that Stiles can feel if not see, and he's gotten halfway across the room before Talia says, "Wait." She takes a deep breath. "I'm sorry. I handled that badly. Please sit down, Stiles." Somewhat reluctantly, Stiles returns to his chair. He's lost his appetite, and all the wolves seem uneasy. He just wants to scream. The last thing he wants to do is sit politely with this woman who hates him, who only puts up with him for the sake of her son's feelings, who will never welcome him into her pack, even if Derek was being honest about claiming him as a mate. Aaron hastily changes the subject, bringing up something that had happened at work that day. Stiles stares at his plate and wonders how soon he can leave. But when Peter walks in, everyone basically forgets his little tiff with Talia. Stiles is starting to learn how to tell when Peter's having a bad day. It's not anything he can read off Peter himself, not yet, but from the others around him. Cora's quick intake of breath, the sudden tension in Derek's spine, the look of sorrow on Laura's face. That's how he knows to be cautious with Peter. "Make no mistake," Laura had told him one afternoon, when no one else was in the house except the children. "Peter is my uncle, and I love him, but he was the most dangerous member of this pack even before the fire broke him. So just, I know that you like him and the two of you get along, but never forget that, okay?" She was so earnest about it that Stiles never has. But now Talia's here, and she takes a look at Peter and says quietly, "Peter, sit down and have some dinner." It's the most gentle that Stiles has ever seen her. Peter sits down at the place that had been set for him, that's always set for him, even when nobody has seen him for days. But he stares at Talia, his eyes shining blue and his teeth slightly bared. "There's too much garlic," he says. Stiles feels like maybe he should apologize, but Talia says firmly, "Stiles made dinner. You should eat it." "Olivia wouldn't have made it with so much garlic," Peter persists, and Stiles feels like he's been punched in the gut. From the collective wince around the table, he thinks everyone feels the same way. And now he understands, at least a little, why the other wolves were confused by the way he had belittled his new position in the pack. He makes a mental note to look up den-making when he gets home. Talia rests a hand on Peter's forearm. "Peter," she says, the word heavy, a command, and not just from the repetition. "Stiles made dinner. You should eat." I don't know how all of you can sit here and eat after half of our family was murdered. Peter! Talia's voice is a snarl now. You need to calm down. Peter snarls back, but then flinches away at the red flare in her eyes. Talia, his voice breaks. It isn't right. None of this is right. I know. Talia draws him into an embrace, pressing his face into her shoulder. I know, brother. I know. Stiles sits there feeling awkward and vaguely embarrassed, witnessing something incredibly intimate that he feels like he has no right to see. A few moments later, Peter gathers himself, mumbles something, and flees the room. Talia rubs one hand over her face before anyone can see the tears, and pours herself another glass of water. Stiles knows he should mind his own business, but he can't help the question. He needs to understand. I thought the fire was an accident. It was, Talia says briskly. Seeing the look on his face, Aaron says, Peter had a hard time handling that. He needed somebody to blame for what happened. We let him believe it because we thought it would help him cope. Unfortunately, over the years, he's gotten somewhat fixated on it. We just try not to encourage him, okay? Okay, Stiles says, because hell, what else can he say to that? He had been angry after his mother's death, but it had been an illness, and there had been no one to blame. He doesn't know if it would have helped if there had been, but he thinks he can understand the impulse. Nobody has much of an appetite after that, so Laura and Derek clear the table, and Stiles decides to head home. But the thought nags at him. He can't really say why. It's just that after spending weeks with Peter, he's starting to respect the man's intelligence, if nothing else. So when he gets home, he decides to put his mind at ease. He tosses his jacket over the back of a chair and says to his father, "The Hale House fire was an accident, right?" He expects a simple, "Yes, why do you ask?" which will answer the question and allow him to forget about it. But instead, his father looks up, over the rim of his reading glasses, and says, "I was never really sure, to be honest. What brought that on?" Stiles frowns a little. "Peter said something about it." Sheriff Stilinski taps at the table with the end of his pencil. "The fire investigator ruled that it was an electrical fire," he finally says, "and he would know more about it than I would have. But I always thought that it spread a little too fast to be accidental. I offered to look into it when I became sheriff, but Talia Hale accepted the investigator's explanation, so I let it go." "Werewolves would have been able to smell it if there had been any accelerants used, right?" Stiles asks. His father nods. "Yes, that's one of the reasons it was ruled accidental." "Huh." Stiles chews on this for a minute before deciding he has nowhere near enough information to form an opinion. "Okay." "Stiles," Tom says, "you've got that look." "What look?" Stiles feigns innocence. "The 'I'm going to poke my nose where it doesn't belong' look," Tom says. "Son, I'm glad you and Derek are getting along better. I really honestly am. But if Talia Hale wants to let it rest, you'd be better off not arguing with her." Stiles' jaw sets. "Like I give a rat's ass what she thinks," he says. Sheriff Stilinski lets out a breath. "Stiles, look. We've put off talking about a lot of this, but maybe it's time that we do, if you and Derek are getting more serious." "We are not getting more serious." "Son, you're over there every day after school." "Yeah, 'cause his sister's like me." "And in what way is that not getting serious with a werewolf?" Tom challenges, and Stiles' gaze slides to the side. "Stiles, really, I want what's best for you, and if you want to go for this, then go for it. But don't make an enemy of an alpha, any alpha, okay?" "Look, all I'm trying to do is survive until Derek gets sick of his little joke and finds a real mate," Stiles says, trying not to think about the way Derek had scent-marked him a few weeks prior. Not just a little, but thoroughly, desperately. "School sucks right now, so I've made friends with his sisters. It's not a big deal, so just let it go, okay?" His father sighs. Okay, but be careful if you're going to look into this. And don't tell me you're not going to, because I know you. Styles makes a face, but says, I'll be careful. Derek has done a lot of thinking about places he wants to take Styles, outings that he would be interested in, that could be something done as friends rather than an actual date. After some debate and lengthy discussion with Cora, who thinks he's a gigantic nerd, he decides to invite Styles to come along with him to his favorite used bookstore. It's a two-story affair with a small cafe that serves sandwiches and pastries, and books are stacked haphazardly on every flat surface. It's impossible to gauge Styles' enthusiasm over text, since his response is, sure, okay. But there's no expression, no scent to go along with it. But when he meets Styles there, he sees everything in the teenager just light up with excitement and, well, lust. Book lust. It's a specific scent that he's never encountered before, and he likes it. A lot. Greeting him is a little awkward, because it often is these days, as he has to vigorously restrain himself from, well, greeting Styles. His scent had worn off the teenager quickly, and he always wants to replace it. But he's getting over it now, especially now that he's seeing Styles frequently, and so the teenager is picking up some of his scent, if only from proximity. Styles grabs a basket and moves from section to section with childlike enthusiasm. He picks up books on the most eclectic things, famous naval battles, the Human Genome Project, Moons of Neptune, drug cartels in Mexico. Anything and everything just gets dumped into his basket, along with a sizable selection of fiction. Derek follows him, occasionally sitting down in one of the store's plush chairs when Styles gets particularly engrossed in something. Once Styles has made his purchases, Derek suggests they grab a bite to eat. Styles looks in his wallet, with the expression of someone who is half expecting moths to fly out. I'm kind of broke, he says, and pats the stack of books. That was the last of my money. Totally worth it, though. Derek shrugs. I can catch the check this time, he says, tacking this time onto the end to make sure he doesn't injure Styles' pride. Styles makes a face but agrees, and Derek gets coffee for Styles and a soda for himself and a sandwich for both of them. The topic doesn't come up again, because Styles is already reading three of his new books at once, chattering unself-consciously about what he's reading. But Derek can't help but wonder. Less than a month has gone by since Styles nonchalantly shelled out several $100 for a set of new tires. He knows the teenager doesn't have a job, but it seems exceedingly awkward to try to ask questions about his financial situation. He thinks back over the time that he's known Styles, and he's never seemed short on money. They've gone to the arcade at least once. They'd eaten out a couple times. He's heard Styles talk about movies or video games that he's bought, and he'd seen Styles spend big-time money to get the new cats and things. The cat tree alone had cost over $100. And yet suddenly, he's broke. Broke, but happy. Derek was glad that he had brought him here. Styles pulls out another book from his stack, and Derek sees that it's a cookbook, one of those 365 easy meals type of books that the Food Network puts out. Do you like goulash? Styles asks, skimming through the pages. I have no idea. What is it? Derek eyes the book. Laura looks at books like that like they have bigger teeth than she does. I buy them used when I can. Then they have notes from other people. Like in Harry Potter, you know, always buy your textbooks and your cookbooks used. Goulash is a beef stew, onions and tomato and macaroni. It's originally from Hungary, and you probably don't care. Styles, are we talking about anything else right now? Derek asks, eyebrows up. Yes, we're talking about your sister being afraid of cookbooks. Seriously, how did you all survive this long? I'm amazed that you don't have rickets or scurvy. I bring citrus fruit home from work. Some of the trees are old enough to produce it, and we have an orange and a grapefruit tree on the property. That's how we avoid scurvy. I'm not sure about rickets. He smirks a little and says, you weren't expecting me to have an answer, were you? Anyway, you could make goulash next time you cook. You don't even know what rickets is, asshole. Don't even front with me, Styles says. And yes, I could. Maybe I even will. Tyler loves stuff with macaroni. Derek gives an amused huff. I have no fucking clue what rickets is. He pulls out his receipt and a pen. Tell me what you need, and I can make sure we have it. What? No way. It's easier to just do the shopping myself, Styles says. That way I don't have to worry about explaining the difference between crushed tomatoes and stewed tomatoes, and have you calling me saying that I asked for 12-ounce cans, but they only have 16-ounce cans, like it's a tragedy. I've played this game with my father. Okay, Derek says, lifting his hands in surrender. But he can't help but wonder. If Styles is doing the shopping and won't write lists for people, is that where all his money is going? Feeding a pack of wolves? He doesn't ask, though, since he has a feeling that Styles will get annoyed at him. They eat their sandwiches and talk about random things, and then he has to help Styles carry his books because, well, there are a lot of them. He takes Styles home and heads back towards the house. It's a weekend, so everyone is there. Laura is flopped on the sofa, watching television while Tyler plays with his trains. It's Sylvia's nap time. Derek comes in and greets everyone verbally, but not physically, which is a little unusual for him. He makes a beeline for the kitchen. There's a bit of rustling, and then he calls out, "Hey, Laura?" "Hey, what?" Laura calls back. "Do you know what cardamom is?" "Sounds like a Hallmark greeting," she replies. Derek makes his way into the living room and holds out a jar of the spice to his sister, giving her another shot at recognition. She just gives him a blank look. "Okay, and this one?" he asks, holding out another jar. She glances up at him. "Coriander. So?" "Didn't buy it." "What? No. Did you notice I'm watching the television?" "Yep, I noticed. Hold these." He holds out the jars to her, one in each hand, so she'll grab them the same way, which she does. Only once her hands are occupied does he reach out and smack her upside the head. He knows what her reflexes and training are like. Taking her off guard won't do any good if her hands are free. "Ow, Derek," Laura says, as Derek takes the jars back. "What was that for?" "For not buying the spices, or the eggplants, or the pie crusts, or the macaroni, or any of the things we've been eating for the last 2 weeks at least." Derek fumes right back at her. What? Laura asks. "How is this my fault? I told Styles that he could use whatever he wanted from our food and to let me know if he needed things we didn't have." "And when things started to appear that we didn't have and we didn't buy it, you didn't say anything to him or offer to take him shopping and pay him back?" Derek asks, his eyebrows in full judgment mode. "I had already told him to let me know if he needed things," Laura shoots back. "What do you want me to do? Treat him like he's a child? He's trying to make a place in this pack. How was I supposed to tell him not to buy things?" Derek judges her less at that, but he's not willing to let it go. "He's 16, Laura. Cora doesn't have that sort of money. I know he's trying to make a place for himself, but he also thinks he has something to prove." He rubs a hand over his face. "I don't want him thinking that he has to earn a place in the pack. I wish he would have said something to me, at least, if not to him." "I guess it just never occurred to me that it was a big deal," Laura says, but her tone is apologetic. Derek flops on the sofa, setting the spices on the coffee table before cuddling up to her. "I'm starting to learn that all sorts of things are a big deal with Styles." "Well, how do you want me to handle it?" Laura asks, somewhat uncertain. "I'll handle it," Derek says. He doesn't think he needs to make Laura feel bad by telling her that Styles is broke. "I'm going to take him shopping tomorrow or the next day. Show him the good shops for free-range meat, things like that. I'll just give them my card and tell them to keep it on file for any time Styles comes in. Not give him a choice or talk about it. Sometimes things go a little better if I just steamroll forward." He pauses. "Not always. Sometimes I'm pretty sure that'd be a good way to get myself killed." Laura gives a snort of laughter. "Yeah, I can imagine. But okay. If you think you can do it without him noticing, though, you'd better think again. Oh, no, I'm not even going to bother to try to hide it. Derek snorts, as if hiding things from Stiles is the stupidest thing he's ever heard. Stiles may have ADD, but he's at least as smart and observant as Uncle Peter. Well, good luck, then, Laura says. Fortune favors the bold. It goes about as well as Derek anticipates. Stiles suspiciously accepts his offer to go shopping because he, quote, needs to get a few things anyway. He suspiciously gives Derek the side eye when they go down the baking aisle, which incidentally has cooking implements in it, and Derek starts examining them and trying to drop hints that Stiles might need some of them. He suspiciously allows Derek to examine produce with him and suspiciously follows Derek to the register. When Derek says to the cashier, "I talked to Rick earlier about putting my card on file," the cashier nods and says okay, and suddenly their groceries are bagged and they're on their way out of the store and Stiles has yet to object. "Dude," he says as they load the groceries into the Camaro, "do you have any idea how subtle you are not?" "Would subtle have done me any good?" Derek asks forthrightly. "Depends on how you look at it. I might have gotten to laugh at you, which would have been okay from my standpoint." "I'm sorry I disappointed you," Derek says. "How exactly would one go about being subtle about this?" "I don't know, but I'm pretty sure that suggestively fondling a meat thermometer isn't it." "I was not." "Uh-huh. You just keep telling yourself that, buddy. Anyway, thanks for the groceries, 'cause I was broke. Like, completely, actually, wasn't sure where your next meal was going to come from, broke. But now I can make the cookies that Cora's been whining about." Derek perks up. "Cookies? What kind?" "You'll see," Stiles says. With a pout, Derek says, "Anyway, they'll keep my card on file and charge it whenever you need groceries or whatever." "Fine," Stiles says, rolling his eyes. "Whatever floats your boat." Stiles sits on his bed, staring at the blank white space in front of him for several long minutes. He's taken one of his posters and turned it over so he can write on the back. He's seen his father use whiteboards at work when trying to solve a crime, or bulletin boards, and this will have to serve as a handy alternative. Finally, he stands up and starts to write on the poster with a Sharpie. Problem number one, which takes the center of the poster, is the Hale House fire. But there's another, equally large, if less dramatic, problem, and that's the misinformation that's being spread about the werewolf world. He writes, "Misinformation, WLO, underneath the first problem. After some deliberation, he then writes car vandalism as the third mystery. He doesn't think it was a coincidence that his tires were slashed in just such a way that it did call the possibility of a werewolf attack into question. But he doubts very much that Talia was behind it, and he knows that Peter didn't do it, if only because Peter is smart enough that he would have made it not look like a werewolf attack. He hadn't thought of it at the time. Kate had left him too off balance to consider it, but he also doesn't think it's chance that she just happened to pick him up that morning. She had known what had happened to his car. She had been waiting to intercept him. She had known that the tires were shredded, not just slashed. That didn't necessarily mean she was behind what had happened to his tires. Correlation is not causation, he reminds himself, but it's suspicious as hell. If nothing else, she took advantage of the moment. Once these three things are written on the paper, he sits back down and looks at them for a long minute. He's at that point where he's had just the right amount of Adderall and caffeine, and is in something of a focused trance. He just stares, drawing lines and connections in his mind. The WLO had been suspected of werewolf assassinations before, and Talia Hale was a prominent figure in the werewolf world. It would make sense that they might target her. But given her status, it also made sense that they would make it look like an accident. Several things were suspicious about the Hale House fire. Stiles had gotten the file on it out of the police station while nobody was looking. Primarily the speed at which it had spread. Electrical fires can do that, he's learned from copious research, but it usually happens in older houses with extremely faulty wiring, which results in a chain reaction. The Hale House hadn't exactly been new, but it certainly hadn't been decrepit either. But the use of accelerants was almost definitely ruled out, because the werewolves would have smelled them. Stiles gets up and writes, "Natural accelerants?" in a little bubble, then connects it to the fire. Then he adds, "Scent interference?" in a separate bubble. Those seem to be the two most likely possibilities. The second thing he finds suspicious is that almost everyone in the family had been home when the fire had happened. Peter Hale was the only exception. He had been out of town on business and returned just in time to see the smoldering wreckage. That might have been a less of a coincidence if the fire had happened at night, but it had instead been midday on a Saturday. "Someone knew their schedule," Stiles writes on the poster, and then underneath, "or was watching the house." The sequence of events was sketchy, but the lead detective at the time had put together a timeline. The fire had sparked at 1:35 p.m. Derek had gotten out first, hauling his younger sister with him. Aaron staggered out a minute later, carrying a limp, coughing Laura in his arms. Derek had, over his father's protests, run back into the house to look for his brothers. Talia had stayed inside, too, looking for the others, but the smoke had kept her from finding anybody and had eventually forced her out. "Thick smoke. Coincidence?" Stiles writes in another bubble. The fire trucks had arrived at 1:41 p.m., and by then the house was engulfed in flames. Peter Hale had arrived at 1:44 p.m. and had been pinned to the ground, howling in desperation, by his sobbing older sister Talia, to keep him from rushing into the death trap the house had become. At 1:48 p.m., the house had collapsed in on itself with the rest of the Hale family inside. Stiles writes, "Structural integrity?" in a circle. It took almost an hour to put the flames out completely. Up until that point, nobody could make it inside. The first firefighters entered the house at 2:38 p.m., moving cautiously in the wreckage. Most of the bodies wound up in the basement, carried down by gravity as the house had collapsed. Derek was the lone exception. His body had wound up caught on a beam, suspended above the flames. He had practically been cooked inside his own skin, but he had survived. Nobody else who had been caught inside the house when it collapsed had. Stiles lists the name of the deceased in one corner of the poster. He feels like it's necessary, a heavy reminder of what had been lost. Daniel Hale, 62. That was Talia's father, and at the time of the fire, the alpha of the pack. Stephen Hale, 38. Abby Hale, 37. Paula Hale, 12. Talia's brother, his mate, and their child. Olivia Hale, 27, an unborn child. Peter's mate. Tyler Hale, 15. David Hale, 8. Derek's two brothers. Looking at it, Stiles realizes that Laura had named her son after her brother who had died. He wipes a hand over his eyes. Writing it all down like that makes it feel much more real. Next to that, the survivors list looks pitiful. Talia, Aaron, Laura, Derek, Cora, and Peter. That was it. Stiles feels a pang of sympathy for Talia, remembering what Derek had said about how empty the pack felt. Despite these suspicious factors, the thick smoke, the collapse of the house, the fire had been ruled an accident. Stiles flips through and finds the official report. The fire investigator signed it at the bottom. "Okay," Stiles says, and writes his name on the poster. "Let's start with you."